Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
It's nearly 1 o'clock in the morning. Dominic Thiem hasn't even come into his press conference yet. But he is into the semi-finals of the Australian Open for the first time in his entire life, which means that the world number one, Rafael Nadal, is no more in the 2020 Australian Open. We will be having a new men's singles finalist because it is going to be the Dominic Thiem or Alexander Zverev. And what a night. What a performance from Thiem, and such a match rich in different types of
entertainment,
Catherine Whittaker. Yeah, but you know, it wasn't straightforward. It wasn't linear. It was just all over the shop. It was a roller coaster. It was a meandering journey.
Well, I would say, first of all, God, it feels good to be right for a change.
Oh yeah, we got one right.
Given that we all backed Thiem, I just thought I should put that out there.
Yeah.
Given that we're wrong most of the time.
Yeah. Some of us put our hypothetical money where our mouth is.
Yeah. So, some of us picked Sarah as well. Hey, I'm on fire today. But anyway, let's not worry about that. Let's just start with this Thiem Nadal match. I've just, nice bit, name drop, just walked straight past him, Nadal, as he came out of the press conference. And he still has the politeness to say hello as he's walking past, absolutely crestfallen after having been beaten. And he got beaten at his own game today, and then some. But it was interesting talking to Marion Bartoli in the BBC radio commentary box. This wasn't the same, from my vantage point, as the US Open match, where he was just blitzing winners and it was go for broke tennis at all costs. This time he just stood toe to toe with him and said, I'm the stronger, I'm the faster, I'm the guy with the bigger shots, and I can grind you down.
It is absolutely the difference between Thiem, the tennis player on a hard court 18 months ago when he played Nadal in that US Open match. It was largely hit and hope tennis, I thought.
He was always hanging on, or you always felt like he was hanging on.
Whereas now he has conviction and he has strategy and he genuinely believes he can win these big matches, and he can. Until he's serving for the match or have any sort of match points whatsoever. But it's such a difference. You believe with him now because yeah, his tennis is as good as Nadal's on a hard court, and Nadal is better. Nadal has denied in his press conference that he was feeling agitated, was the word that was trying to be put to him in his press conference. He didn't quite understand that in English, but frustrated. But watching his reactions, it certainly felt like he was more frustrated because of what Thiem was doing to him, because of the way Thiem, as you said, David, was beating him with his own brand of tennis, with topspin ground strokes, with physical rallies from the baseline. It wasn't like he was being hit off the court by a big server who was just taking Nadal's time away and beating him on a fast grass court like we've seen. It wasn't like that.
It's not like he's got the Djokovic kryptonite of an absolutely established formula.
Yeah.
Thiem was just working it out as he went, and he decided to just go toe-to-toe, and basically he manhandled Rafael Nadal for the best part of 4 hours.
He was the guy making things happen, Dominic Thiem. He was both standing toe-to-toe with Nadal, but also the one saying, I've had enough of this rally, I'm going for it now.
Mm.
He was the one taking the chances, but with margin for error. He was the one, he was the playmaker out there. He really, really was. He took my breath away tonight, barring a couple of games where it was, I mean, when he served for the match in the fourth, it was a double fault and 3 forehand errors. It was as visual and palpable a choke as you'll ever see. And he admitted as much in his on-court interview with Jim Courier. Yeah. But it was so human how obvious it was.
That's why he's one of the reasons people like him so much as well, though, isn't it? Because you can see it. Mm. You can see that human. He's not able to act like Nadal and Federer do and put that face on. It's creeping out from every pore. But the interesting thing was, even though he was a breakdown in both the first two sets, he still felt like the better player. It was kind of difficult to understand how he got himself a breakdown.
There was never a point where I thought Thiem is the second best player on this. No. On this tennis court, not one point. It was an absolute testament to the spirit and iron will of Nadal that he won that third set and made the fourth competitive and very nearly pushed a fifth. Tennis-wise, Thiem was better throughout, I thought.
And he won both tie breaks, and then in the third set, he still felt like the better player until, I can't remember the exact point, but I remember the visual of it. There was a rally when he was at the far end of the court from where I was sitting, where he suddenly dropped 2 ground strokes short, and he didn't make proper contact with them. He sort of miscued them. And then he just dumped one. He sort of rolled one into the net, halfway up the net, without any power in it, really. It was trying a rear rally shot, and that was in one rally. And I thought immediately, he's in trouble here, because his nerve's gone. He's tightening up. He can't feel the racket anymore. And I think it was 10 minutes before it was suddenly 2 sets to 1. You know, it just turned.
Lost
immediately.
8 points in a row, didn't he, in that sequence? I mean, yeah, it was so. It's rare that something's among the very elite. It's rare that a weakness is suddenly that blatant.
And yet, we all felt he would still win. Even though he'd suffered this horrible attack of nerves, he was just the better player overall, and all he needed to do is get back into that mode. Now, it would be very easy to sort of, A, lose that flow, and also Nadal to grow in confidence and maybe take over. But it just never felt like that was going to happen to me. Apart from the nerves and the choking, because it happened later on in the fourth set as well, when he was on the brink a few times, but I always felt he'd get over the line.
And I put a lot of that feeling of it just being different down to, well, it's chicken and egg, I suppose, down to that agitation, although Nadal wouldn't accept that word. If Nadal, you don't see him like that.
He looked rattled to me.
He was so rattled, and he knew that Thiem had him.
Down the near end of the court where we were, I tweeted about it. I said, I don't think I've ever seen him look this irritated, this angry on a court, just about things not going the way they're supposed to go. He was as close to sort of showing a visual temper as I've ever seen him.
But he was doing that thing. He turned his back for he would shank a forehand or miss a shot. I mean, more often it was forehands tonight. He'd miss one and he'd turn his back first before then grimacing or really reacting, doing a negative face, because he didn't want to show it to Dominic Thiem. Didn't want to show him that how much it was getting to him. That he knew. I think that he was being, as you both say, beaten at his own game. That's tough to take for Nadal, really tough to take. And it felt, there was sort of a in entirely sporting ways, a sort of a bitterness coming out of him tonight. I think that's a bitter pill for him to swallow.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. And actually, I found his post-match press conference remarks on the subject really enlightening when he was asked about the difference out there today. And he said, he's younger, was the first thing he said. Mm. He's younger, the balls were heavy, he hits the ball incredibly hard. It was an admission that this guy physically outmatched me. He said, and he also referenced the Dominic Thiem speed around the court, which this is the first match that I've ever realised he had that. He hasn't suddenly got faster tonight, but it's the first time I've realised what we're dealing with here. He is as quick as anybody in the world.
Me too. I hadn't quite processed that he is. I mean, we were chatting about it a bit on WhatsApp earlier. Maybe Alex de Minaur, maybe Novak Djokovic at full pelt, but I don't think there's anyone quicker than him. I really don't. Maybe one or two match him, but...
And it's the way he uses his speed, powerfully.
Yeah, he launches himself into a ball.
He doesn't just get there, he gets there and then...
Is on balance.
He's on balance and can lands, strike.
And then he's off again.
It's the foot speed combined with this incredible core strength, the torque he's able to get, the balance and the torque once he gets there. He's just an incredibly balanced individual, isn't he, physically?
We were talking earlier about how Wawrinka Nadal is never a good match, and we were thinking, well, Team Nadal is, so why is Wawrinka Nadal not? And we were thinking of the differences between Wawrinka and Team, and you know, there are subtle differences in the way Team hits his ground strokes. He hits them with a lot more spin than Wawrinka, and he's able to get Nadal off the middle of the court a lot more than Wawrinka is with angles. But when I was watching that match, I thought the main difference is Team speed compared to Wawrinka. You said that it feels like Team is a kind of 2020s upgrade on Wawrinka in that respect, and I thought that was just right. It's just Wawrinka is so physical, but it's purely kind of power of shots and his ability to last physically in matches, or it has been in the past, less so today.
Brute strength.
It's, you know, he beat you in an arm wrestle or a, you know, pushing contest or something. But with Team, it's the physicality of his movement, of his ground strokes, of everything about his tennis is physical. And so is Nadal's. And for Team to outdo Nadal in that respect is mind-boggling.
And when was the last time you saw Nadal, who's so good at the net and so good at setting himself up for an easy volley, but always having soft enough hands and the right instincts to put it away? There were a number of times today where he either played a drop shot and Team got there, and not just got there, but absolutely lashed a forehand past him, or just outfoxed him at the net he had the answers, whether he's on the run and full stretch and coming up with something, or the touches or the lobs, whatever it was. Nadal was left just bereft at times.
And he also missed quite a few simple volleys, probably as a consequence of what Team was doing to him, putting that doubt in his mind, thinking he had to make the volley even better because Team would get there if he didn't. Yeah, just...
I think that was quite a lot of a factor tonight in his frustration and some of his more surprising errors. Just that feeling of powerlessness in the face of...
And Nadal said he played well.
Team.
In the press conference, he said, I played well, I'm happy with my attitude. I mean, I would... And look, I'm not saying he had a bad attitude. All I'm saying is relatively to what you normally say from Nadal, that was as frustrated as I've seen him look. Now, he refutes that. Okay, fair enough. He knows better than me in that regard. But he said, I'm happy with my attitude. I thought I was positive. I thought I tried everything. I didn't quit. I kept on moving forwards. And yet he still didn't win. He didn't win against not Federer slashing his backhand, or not Djokovic with the kryptonite. And this was another guy on a hard court who just took him down.
He was asked, what would you have liked to have done different tonight? And he said, won a tiebreak or two.
Won any tiebreak. And he also had a set two with the umpire, didn't he? Mm. What was that about?
Yeah, so he was...
Time violation?
Yeah, time violation. There was a really one of many explosive, dynamic rallies, 20 shots or so, and then the next point, just before he was about to serve, Nadal was given a time violation. The clock had run down to zero and he hadn't started his motion. And he went over and had a word with the umpire, orally taught, and said, you don't like the good tennis. Twice, I think he said that. His point being that he thinks after a long rally that there should be some kind of discretion and umpires should start the clock a bit later or just allow the players a bit more time. And he actually just said in the Spanish portion of his press conference that he thinks by not allowing that extra time, it's a showing that you don't really understand or appreciate the sport of tennis was the words he used.
I've heard
Spanish.
Him say that sort of thing before.
I have, yeah. Now, I think orally taught was absolutely right to call the time violation because that isn't the rule. I think the question is whether maybe the rule does need looking at because I can understand Nadal's point on that it doesn't feel right that an ace you get 25 seconds and then a massive long rally you get 25 seconds.
But isn't that only exposed by somebody that is pushing the 25 seconds? It doesn't mean please take 25 seconds
no,
every single
I know.
Time. That's kind of allowing for a bit of extra time after a longer, more... I'm not saying there shouldn't be any discretion in extreme circumstances, but...
The problem you have is one umpire does it one way and another does it another way.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think she did anything wrong tonight.
No,
I can understand his frustration with the...
She carried it out to the letter of the law.
Personally, I think she was exercising some discretion because he...
Certainly was later.
He's, yeah.
Yes.
She was not punishing every time he overran the shot clock.
Well, and it was noticeable, Marianne kept drawing our attention to the fact that when the players at the end of a game were coming to sit down, she didn't start the clock on them sitting down until they were already sat down, for instance. You know, she was giving a little... And when it was time up and they were supposed to stand up, she was giving them a bit longer. She was... I mean, look... We had all this, didn't we, with Carlos Ramos and Serena Williams, that the US Open is match management, and there's the absolute rules, and then there's the sort of, well, at what point do I think I don't want to inflame a situation? And which one's right? I don't always know which one's right out of those things. It's a tough job. What I did like, and it was the same last night, is these umpires who were just not kowtowing to the big name. She was trying to do her job correctly, no matter who it was. And whether you agreed exactly with her, the way she deployed the rules, that's up to the individual. But I think once in a while we do see umpires occasionally bend, and I don't like that.
Oh, for sure. Well, I remember Tsitsipas talked about it quite a lot last year, that he thought the top players, and pretty much referring to the big three, I think, do get a slight preferential treatment from umpires in terms of those sorts of situations. They're more lenient with them. And, you know, that's 2 days in a row now. Mariana Veljevic and Orly Tort have, you know, stood up to Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal and are not going to umpire the match any differently than they would with someone else, and that's exactly how it should be.
But they're also not trying to make a point of being authoritarian or anything. They're just no-nonsense doing their thing. It's great. They're not trying to be buddies with the players.
I really like seeing the fact that they just get on with the job and do the job. That's what we're here for. So good for them. It means that... Catherine?
I just feel like we should mention Nadal's challenge on match point.
Oh, yes.
Oh yeah. Now,
it is
I was looking away
best,
at that time.
It is the best challenge that's ever happened.
I was doing a report for Five Live at the time, and I wasn't able to see what was going on. Explain what happened.
So, team gets to 6-4 in the tiebreak, and on his first match point, he hits a great serve, gets the short ball, and dumps a forehand into the net.
And at this point, we've already seen him fail to serve it, get broken to love the first time attempting to serve it out.
Next match point, one of their usual great rallies ensues, and team throws up a lob really, really high. Nadal does his usual thing of backpedaling, gets right behind it, sees it land, and there's no call. And Nadal stops the point. Doesn't even attempt to play a smash. Stops the point.
On match point.
And time seemed to stand still, didn't it? Because the match could have been over.
Yes, so
that
if that ball was even a millimetre in, that was the match there. Team would have won it because Nadal didn't make a play and he stopped the point. I mean, I must say, how bold of Nadal to do it, because it was actually reasonably far out. It wasn't like
It wasn't a good call.
It wasn't a great call.
Because it's coming... It's one thing, you know, a top spin shot that's shooting through. This was coming down longitudinally onto the line.
And slowly.
It's a relatively easy call to make.
Could the line judge have been unsighted, maybe? Or
they have to say when they're unsighted, don't they?
Yeah. I think Nadal was behind the ball, so I don't think so too much. It was the baseline line judge. But yeah, how gutsy of Nadal. I couldn't believe
time
what I'd seen.
Time stopped.
Yeah. It was extraordinary.
It was unbelievable. And anybody else, you'd think that's the most... Even if they'd been validated, it's still stupid. Because it's a risk. But doesn't feel that way with Nadal. You feel like he's just got that incredible presence of mind to make a rational judgment in that moment and trust his sight. You know, McEnroe used to say when he was contesting line calls, I genuinely saw them in or out or whatever it was. I wasn't just arguing for the sake of, you know, I wasn't lying. I saw it wrong. My eyes deceived me. And of course, I'm sure that happens to everyone in times of stress, except for Rafael Nadal. I mean, it was just unreal.
What was it like in the stadium at that point? Because you two were in the press seats, weren't you? I was in the commentary box, but, you know, behind a window, so I couldn't hear what the commotion would have been like.
It was going mad. The place was going mad. it was a sense of chaos, really.
Mm.
What have you done?
Yeah. Time stopped.
Yeah.
And then it was okay, because he was all right, but... Then,
it was okay in that it was sort of 6-5 and just all the normal tension just took over again.
Still held it together.
Yeah.
Just about.
It was helpful for him, I think, to have a tie break to finish it off. I don't think he didn't enjoy serving it out. As we've discussed, the biggest tell of his nerves ever when his second serve almost hit the baseline.
He needs his arm to feel loose, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Because it's not... Yeah. As much as it is a
media announcement, Dominic Thiem is now on his way to the main interview room.
As much as it is, it's an incredibly powerful game. It's slightly less muscular power than Nadal. I mean, it feels muscular, but it comes from a slightly different place.
It's whiplash.
It's more Wawrinka-esque, isn't it?
The other thing I noticed, when he hurtles side to side and he's on the full run and then he just does the full take back, when he hits the ball from behind where we are, court level, it's like he's put it in a catapult or he's put it in a bazooka and it just goes off into the distance and you can't quite believe what you're seeing because it doesn't have any... When he hits that backhand full on, it doesn't have any spin on it at all.
And he did one of those at 6-6 in the tiebreak to pass Nadal on his backhand. And we often talk about the way Nadal has essentially invented a new shot with his forehand. You know, never seen anything like it before. And Djokovic, the way he can hit offensive shots from defensive positions. Well, the way Thiem hits that backhand, open stance, one-handed, at such pace, I don't think anyone else can do that.
Matt looked at me open-mouthed when he did that and said, no one else can do that.
Because just thinking, whenever Federer hits a backhand, he takes a big step into it. It's with his right foot, and he steps into it.
Which is more conventional.
Which is more conventional. But Thiem... open stance sort of slid into it and had his left foot near the ball. It blew my mind. we spent most of those 4 hours, 10 minutes just with our...
Marvelling.
Just with mouths wide open.
It was jaw-dropping tennis. One final footnote for Team falling backwards onto his arse, sort of doing a sideways somersault and still winning the point.
Against yes. Nadal. He wins a baseline rally against Nadal.
He fell over.
When he was on his
team is now in the main interview room.
Who earlier is now in the interview room on his arse on the press conference seat. But he was literally arse on the tarmac, on the hard court, on the cement. And then he gets up and he still wins a baseline rally against Rafael Nadal.
Unbelievable.
Goat.
Goat, yeah.
So he now faces Alexander Zverev, who is into his first ever Grand Slam semi-final. And he did emphatically lose his no-sets-dropped record in the first set against Stan Wawrinka, 6-1. But he made a very, very good comeback and won the match. I think he served more than 80% first serves in, which, well, if he carries that on, I mean, he's going to take some stopping, even by Team.
It is a miraculous transformation. Zverev could not serve 3 weeks ago.
No.
He couldn't serve.
He was an embarrassment at the ATP Cup.
Yeah, it was a total disaster. His whole game, his whole attitude, and in particular his serve. And then he goes out there today, and after a slow start against Wawrinka, it becomes the dominant weapon that it can be. And every time he was getting that first serve in, it felt like Wawrinka couldn't get in the rallies. It was just so dominant, such a weapon for him, like it should be. It's to his absolute credit that he somehow managed to do this.
And he's done it by repetition, is what he says. I've just been out on that practice court and I've just hit thousands of serves. Which is exactly what you should do, but I think two things that I like about Zverev, I've not warmed to him like I've warmed to other players. I'm quite happy to admit that. There are a few reasons for it. I think his approach in press conferences, I think the sense sometimes that he thinks he's arrived when he hadn't. There are one or two things there. But at the same time, I love the fact that he's totally in love with tennis. He is obsessed with the game. He desperately, desperately wants to be the best he can be. And I find that quite disarming because he shows his vulnerability when he's talking in those terms. And his commitment is total. You see that he's desperate and he's gonna put it in order to try to turn that serve around. And he did in this particular match. Now, hearing Mark Woodford say in our commentary box today that he doesn't feel 100% that he sorted all this out, that he thinks this might end up being a bit of a sticking plaster. He feels that it could still come undone any time, the serve and the forehand. And the forehand we were watching, he kept dumping forehands in the net or hitting them long. So I don't feel that confident. I think Team should win that semi-final. But I'm not 100. You know, I'm not cast iron on it either.
I mean, Zverev wasn't the playmaker at all today against Stan Wawrinka. It's not like he suddenly started playing different tennis and stopped being perhaps more defensive than a lot of people think he should be. I mean, obviously the serve is an incredible attacking weapon when it's firing like it is. But in terms of the baseline, he's not owning the baseline, I don't think. I mean, he lost the first set heavily because Wawrinka was making the play and they were going in, and he won the subsequent three sets pretty decisively because it stopped going in for Wawrinka. Now, Zverev wasn't missing. He played really well, lovely. There's a smoothness to his strokes that are really, really pleasing, but the first set was evidence that if someone's going for it and taking it on and it's going in, I do think there's still a vulnerability there.
And I think Team should be able to exploit that better than Wawrinka for the full best of five sets.
The movement will help. His own serve will help. I think Team, at one stage I saw, had won, I think, 46 of 52 first serve points that he played.
Yeah.
One note of caution I slightly have about Team, and I'm a total believer, and I do think he'll come through that. I think he really could win the title here, I do. the way he was attempting to serve out the match today, it really made me realise what a monumental hurdle and achievement it now is for him to beat Nadal at a slam. Yeah. Bigger than any other. It would be bigger than beating Federer or Djokovic. I mean, he's beaten Djokovic at a slam, but it's just so much bigger than anything else for him.
Because it's his type of player that
absolutely.
He's trying to become Nadal. Mm.
Yeah, and that it's been his benchmark, hasn't it? He had the French Open semi-final and then the French Open final where he didn't get a set, and then last year the French Open final where he made it a bit, you know, it was, I'm getting closer. That's what we said in the podcast afterwards, isn't it? It was his Andy Murray, yeah. I'm getting closer moment. And then this was his, I mean, I know he's not won anything yet, but this was his Olympic gold medal stepping stone to Grand Slam moment for me. And I do, as I say, I'm still a believer. I'm still backing him to win that semi-final. But I do think there's a just a bit of caution about a potential letdown after. It could feel like the summit.
Yeah, could do. Yeah.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Massive hurdle overcome mentally as well for Zverev. As big a hurdle to reach a semi-final. And how charming was he in that post-match press conference, post-match interview on court, just by letting everybody in the arena know about that, about how much it meant to him. There was no being cool about it. He was like a kid. It was real. I like that. Mm. I like seeing that.
I've always thought the best Zverev is the on-court interviews. Zverev, he's charming. He just thrives in those situations. And McEnroe told him about his serve being a problem. He said, "Yeah, but also my forehand, my backhand, my drop shots,
my volleys,
my waking up in the morning." You know, and it was great. The crowd were loving it.
McEnroe said, "What are you hoping for? Are you looking forward to team against Nadal tonight?" He said, "Oh, I'm looking forward to watching it in my air conditioned hotel room with a glass of Coke and watching them go for 6 hours and get sweaty."
That's my assessment. That's my hope.
And I must say, another thing he mentioned in that on court interview and again in the press conference was about his relationship with his father, who's obviously his coach. And I remember watching the ATP Cup a few weeks ago and thinking that that situation had reached boiling point.
And how sad was it? Because his dad was in tears.
His dad was in tears while Zverev berated him and shouted at him.
And was lost, was utterly bereft.
Completely. So it strikes me that there have been some crisis talks since then. And they've worked it out. And Zverev,
video announcement. Could Robert Jazari Gurjev from Polsky Radio please come to the interview desk?
Pronunciations are hard, folks. It's just important that you try.
Yeah, we will.
There was something about the way Zverev spoke about wanting to prove that it was his fault that his tennis wasn't good in the last year, not his dad's fault, which I felt quite strongly. It hit me that, actually. And he was taking ownership of the last
year. Their attitude post-ATP Cup was, let's get back to work.
Yeah.
And you've got to have A lot of respect for that, I think.
It was his rock bottom, I think.
And he really is talking about how the lower expectations are helping him here.
Yeah.
Because he actually says something interesting in that he's always treated the slams differently in his mind, which we often think is the right thing to do. You want to be peaking for these events, but he's not figured out the way to peak. He thought to peak he needed to do things differently, not go out to dinner in the evening, completely be focused on his tennis.
Yeah.
And he was obsessed with it. He said he was impatient to get the success.
Do you remember Andy Murray saying something like that recently? I mean, I think maybe in that little interview after his documentary aired, that sometimes it's just working on tennis and thinking about tennis all the time. Sometimes, you know what, probably if he'd had a chance again, he might have just tried to learn how to relax a bit more and not worry so much about it all. Very difficult to do. I know that from my own work. I find it sometimes disengaging isn't easy. But he's really grown a bit, I think, Zverev over this fortnight. No matter what happens in the semi-final, I hope he does himself justice. I hope he doesn't freeze. I hope he plays well, regardless of what the result is. It'd be good for him, and it'd be good for kind of this generation, really, just to show up at this slam and have a good result. And at least there is going to be a first-time finalist.
They are good friends, Zverev and team, which can often go one of two ways, can't it? I'm sure it will help them both feel comfortable, but it can feel a bit weird sometimes when friends are playing each other. Will team have that same edge he had, as you've put, Catherine, of really wanting to beat Nadal today?
That'll be interesting.
It'll be interesting to see.
How good was Simona Halep today?
Sublime.
She played at 11 o'clock. By about 11:45, it was over. 6-1, 6-1. Against Annette Contaveit in her first Grand Slam quarterfinal, so perhaps that was also a factor. But she wasn't really allowed to play. Halep just got everything back and just made life a nightmare.
Well, the best tennis I've ever seen Simona Halep play was the Wimbledon final last year against Serena, where she made four unforced errors in two sets. And she was asked to compare her level to that Wimbledon final today, and she didn't say it wasn't as good. She didn't say it was, you know, that level, but she didn't shut it down. She thinks she's playing as well as she ever has. I believe that.
I believe it too.
And what you say about her defence is what mainly strikes you when you watch Halep, and it's what Contaveit said. She didn't feel her shots were having any impact because Halep was there getting them back.
Must be a horrible feeling.
Must be awful. But also, it's a bit like Djokovic. Then she's not a defensive player. When she's at her best, she's an aggressive player with the best defence in the world. But she's trying to play on the front foot. She's trying to dictate. And she was doing that against Contaveit a lot of the time. She was rushing Contaveit herself. So if she's got both departments working, how do you beat her?
Feels hers to lose.
Maybe Garbiñe Muguruza can beat her. She beat Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova today. Muguruza against Halep, which is what we expected. I would make Halep the favourite, but Muguruza's always got that little bit of X factor about her, hasn't she? Because she's won two Grand Slam titles and because she believes that if she plays her best tennis, she beats everybody. That's how she approaches things.
Yeah, there were interesting similarities and contrasts with the Zverev press conference from Muguruza's press conference today, in that she unashamedly cares about the slams more than anything else and doesn't think that needs adjustment at all. Then, of course, they're at different stages of their careers. Zverev has had highs and lows, but she's had more extreme, and of course she's already won a couple of Grand Slam titles, but she's like, yeah, it's about slams for me. You know, the fact that after her last match she was unabashedly talking about the career slam, you know, this is what matters to her. History is what matters to her. But then there were comparisons in terms of she's pretty reluctant to talk about her tribulations over the past couple of years, and, you know, she doesn't really engage with chat about her drop-off in ranking. She says she doesn't really... She admits to there having been challenging times, but she says she doesn't really look at rankings. She doesn't read into those that much. But she was asked kind of... The question was kind of rephrased a bit and put to her to try and get her to expand a bit on how tough it's been and what's dragged her out of it, I suppose, other than Conchita Martinez, which is the obvious link. And she said that what she found hardest over the last year or so is the feeling of working hard, maybe even working harder than you ever have, and it's still not clicking. Because there is this mantra in a sort of post-X Factor world, and there's lots positive about it. We heard Caroline Wozniacki say it in her parting press conference, that if you work hard enough, you can achieve anything, right? That's this sort of... And there's obviously positive messaging in there. But then what about when you're working as hard as you possibly can, possibly even too hard, Andy Murray, and it's still not happening? And because we all know it is not just about hard work.
And what has Zverev said? You know, he feels that he's almost too professional. So it wouldn't have been a bad thing to maybe go and have a beer and just relax for a bit. I've definitely experienced it myself, burnout, just by pushing too hard. Because when actually just chilling out for a bit, sometimes, and decompressing is good for you, and it's really difficult to know when to do which. It's really difficult. Sometimes you need, that's why you need good people around you, isn't it? That's why they need a good coach.
And it's a brave thing to do when your results are rubbish, to go, I'm going to have a beer, I'm not going to go to the gym. You know, of course, especially as professional athletes, you know, your instinct is, I'll spend more time in the gym. You know, when Zverev lost, I think it was after the... It was after a victory, but after one of his unnecessary five-setters at the US Open, he came onto the practice courts behind our Amazon studio, and he was on there for another 2 hours. And, of course, it was impressive. Everybody was just mesmerised by his commitment. But I just thought, how can this possibly be
helpful,
the right thing? He just played a five-setter. It wasn't like, oh... You know, I've just won in 55 minutes. I'd better get myself a proper workout.
Okay. Well, all good. What a day. What a day we've had. And it leaves us with tomorrow, play starting once again at 11 o'clock local time, but with the doubles semi-finals of Dodig and Polasek against Purcell and Luke Saville. It's not before 2 o'clock in the afternoon for Ash Barty and Sofia Kenin. Then followed by Halep against Muguruza, and then the evening match is Roger Federer against Novak Djokovic. I've just run into Craig Tiley and had a chat with him, and I asked him whether the framework that we've seen for the order of play over the last 3 days of a single match in the night session and it always being men, whether that is how it is from now on. And he said no. He said it'll change every year. There are different factors, that this is not a new set-in-stone order of play for those days. And he was categoric about that.
So what are the factors?
Multiple.
Right.
In as much as... I mean, look, this is what he said, is... There are so many factors to consider when doing an order of play. For instance, he said, I have had the men, I can have the male players complaining about having only two of the five matches on the Rod Laver Arena, and saying that they're penalised because they're playing best of five sets, and therefore, I imagine he means the tours rather than individual male players. And obviously the women's tour, as we've highlighted, are not getting the showtime, the prime time slot at all in week two, in the evening session, which I find... I just feel that should be right at the top of the list of priorities to even that out. I don't care how you do it logistically, but I feel like it should be happening. And look, I do understand his conundrum generally from a logistical point of view. I've seen the behind the scenes at a big tournament at Queen's many years, and it's not a slam like this. I know what he would be up against. I just feel that, like, parity of stage should be of paramount importance.
When push comes to shove, it's the same thing that always gets shoved. It's not an accident. It's because the
that certainly happened this year.
It's on a slope. The playing field isn't level to start with.
But so it's not set in stone, is what he said, at all. And, you know, it'll be different. He said it'll be different next year.
But, I mean, what is set in stone at the Australian Open and has been for years is the women's semi-finals taking place in the day.
Yeah, and he did say that that's not changing. I mean, or there's no plan for that to change as things stand. But my query was over those first 3 days, which are so different to a year ago, and whether that was a new policy. Mm. And he said, no, it wasn't.
A lot of people have been pointing out that it's basically been impossible to follow the women's competition in Europe.
Yeah.
Because it's all taking place in the middle of the night.
And actually, when I was reading out the order of play on BBC Radio today, I was saying, you know, we'll keep you up to date with Ash Barty and Simona Halep, but it'll be 2, 3, 4 in the morning and UK time. Look, and I know the UK isn't the only important territory. I mean, there's people all around the world listening to this podcast, I'm happy to say, and you're all on different time zones. But it is a consideration, and the bigger consideration for me more generally is that even though Ash Barty wants to play in the afternoon, and I totally get that for her chances, what a shame that there's so many people who are at school or at work, and that's a shame.
Yeah, it's going to, if she goes out at, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday, it'll be like, did it really happen?
And more generally, the bigger audience is in the evening, and therefore I just feel that they should just have that.
Why is
equal.
What's right not that? I know there are loads of factors, but why is what's right not a dominating fact? Why does that not?
I mean, I would imagine the answer that somebody in that position would give is what's right to you isn't necessarily what's right, in inverted commas, in terms of most important to them. I agree with you, Catherine, but, you know, that's where we are. So I thought I'd let you know what I managed to get out of that conversation. Margaret Court Arena tomorrow. We'll see Joe Salisbury first up in the doubles semi-finals alongside Rajiv Ram against Bublik and Kukushkin. Bublik as a doubles player in the semi-finals. I thought that'd be quite entertaining. And then there are mixed doubles quarterfinals on those courts as well. There's the final of the quad wheelchair doubles with Dylan Alcott and Davidson against Andy Lapthorne and Wagner. There's some Legends matches. There's loads of Junior matches. We will get into those when we get into the weekend and we get into the final
Andy
stages.
Andy Lapthorne's made a complaint today. He's tagged us and a number of other people in on a tweet about lack of parity in pay and in draw size from the quad wheelchair singles, which is what he competes in comparison to the other wheelchair events. Now, I haven't had the chance to look into that. I've just seen the headline of it. Mm. And obviously on the face of it, it doesn't feel quite right, but I'm going to try and set some time aside to investigate a little further.
See if we can find out. And on the subject of I guess you could say controversies. Martin and Navratilova and John McEnroe today issued apologies, qualified apologies at least, for breaking the protocol of the Australian Open's accreditation rules. Martina said she wasn't aware of the detail of the protocol, and she shouldn't have protested in the way that she did on Margaret Court Arena. And still stands by everything she says and thinks, but should have done it in a different way. John McEnroe said, I've never followed rules, and I haven't followed them this time. But I have lots of respect for the Australian Open, and basically, they needed to come to a solution that didn't involve McEnroe and Navratilova having their accreditation removed and being thrown off site. So that sounds like what they've come up with. And yeah, I mean, like I say, there are rules that we all have to sign up to when we get our accreditation badges, and I suspect John and Martina probably aren't fine print readers when it comes to that. And there's the evidence. So anyway, that's happened, and we roll on to tomorrow. Or today, later today. It is 1:39 a.m. Let's go to bed, folks. Have we got any shout-outs, Matt?
Oh, yes, we have. To Michael Thomas, to Susan Sutherland, and to Lee Ferguson.
Michael Thomas, he scored the winning goal for Arsenal in the league title race with Liverpool in 1989. Is it that one? Hello, Michael.
Hello, Michael.
Thanks
please,
for listening.
Please
to
let us know.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Podcast. And who else we got? Susan?
Susan Sutherland.
Susan Sutherland.
And Lee Ferguson.
Lee. Excellent. Thank you all.
Lots of.
And I found
all
out
of all. Those could be footballers.
Yeah.
And I found out today that the famous cricketer Steve Smith is a listener. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Steve.
He hasn't even backed us on the Kickstarter, and he still gets a shout out.
He could be anonymous.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Famous listeners.
He's not
to the tennis
flashy
podcast.
Guy, is he? Like proper nerdy tennis fan.
Is he?
He was there tonight. He lives and breathes.
He's listening to this. You don't want to call him a nerd.
I don't know if he's. I think he would take it as a compliment.
Oh, okay.
Nerds
Steve
for all the world,
Smith.
David.
Right.
David, it's Steve Smith.
We're nerds living around this table, so we're right behind it.
Okay. I don't know if he's like a religious listener. Why?
Of course he is.
I've got no reason not to think so, but I know he does listen.
All right, Steve. So we will be back tomorrow with another tennis podcast, or later today, or no, probably will be tomorrow, 80 hours, obviously. Federer playing. What, we got any predictions
not
going
if,
on?
Well, there's. There's chatter.
Is anybody going for Federer?
I don't want to deflate everyone's balloon, but there are rumours.
Who's going for Federer?
Well, no, there are rumours that it might not happen.
Oh. Why? Rumours?
Prepare yourself for some Legends doubles.
Where have you heard this rumour?
I don't think anyone is saying that it won't happen, but I think it's something that we do need to be prepared for.
Right. Okay.
He was not in a good shape, Federer, 2 days ago.
And he doesn't retire from matches.
He doesn't retire from matches. Mm-hmm. Is he stepping on that court if he's not feeling good?
Given the bloke down the other end.
Given the bloke down the other end.
If he's not sure he can finish, he's not going to start.
Hmm. Okay, well, we'll wait and see, shall we?
But tune into the podcast tomorrow anyway, folks.
Anyway, yeah, all you Federer fans. We know you love it anyway. Whatever. And before that, Barty to win. We're going to got a Barty
in three. I think, I don't underestimate Kenin. I don't think anyone should. But Barty in three nervy sets.
Yeah, I think it is going to be nervy.
Yeah,
dreamer,
tense.
Yeah. This is the tense one.
Yeah.
Okay.
So. And what I really like about Halep Muguruza, just thinking about it, is whoever wins will have the chance to play for the third quarter of their career slam, which feels like such a significant.
They've both got
factor.
The same, haven't
they've
they?
They've both got the same slams. They're missing the hardcourt ones.
Delicious.
It is great.
Do you know what I'd do? If I were you, listeners, I'd go and get on Reddit and join our tennis community and chat with everybody about all this.
There are some very creepy mat-based memes doing the rounds.
They're quite funny. He's not laughing.
I never thought I would become a meme, but it's happened.
I've had to look up what a meme is in the Urban Dictionary. And it still doesn't really make any sense to me. Anyway, our Reddit group link is in the show notes. Scan down and sign up to that. And also our newsletter, which is coming out fairly soon with Matt's stat and with our predictions for tomorrow. And don't forget to tell people you know about the Tennis Podcast. I've heard you're doing a pretty good job of it on the whole, but I think you can do better. And I know this because our numbers keep going up, which we love. So keep doing it so that every time I look at the numbers, they're higher. All right? There's your job. Go and do it. We'll see you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.